Where does calorie tracking and macro counting stop and intuitive eating begin? And what is the underlying cause of your desire to be dieting in the first place? That's what we're discussing on this episode of the Smart Nutrition Made Simple Show.
Welcome to the Smart Nutrition Made Simple Show, where each week you'll hear the real-world experiences, life lessons, and guided principles that every highly driven man needs to master. Their health, productivity, and relationships by sharing conversations with the world's most successful people in fitness, nutrition, supplementation, and mindset. Meet your host, Benjamin Brown. He is a fitness and nutrition expert, consultant to Fortune 500 companies and world championship sports teams, a husband and father of three, and has been helping men transform their physiques, optimize their energy, and own their fatherly mission since 2005. Thank you for joining us today, and without further ado, let's jump right in.
Hey, what's up, guys, and welcome to episode number 84 of the Smart Nutrition Made Simple Show. Today, we're joined by my friend Justin Janoska to take a deep dive into many of the problems with the fitness industry and the obsession around calorie counting, tracking macros, flexible dieting, and the surface-level behaviors that can often be rooted in really deep-seated pain, shame, regret, and lack of self-love and acceptance. Now, this certainly isn't to say that these tools can't be used as positive modalities towards weight loss goals, but there definitely is a fine line, as we'll discuss. Justin is a clinician and founder of the Autoimmune Revolution, an emerging company that guides women in their healing journey to reverse their autoimmune disease and reproductive disorder naturally, with special attention on Hashimoto's, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, PCOS, and endometriosis. Now, this episode is a little beyond the scope of what I normally talk about on the show, but I feel it's my responsibility to shed some light on if you're serious about making a change and genuinely want to understand many of the driving factors for why we do what we do. Despite Justin working primarily with women, I assure you that this discussion is gender neutral, as there are plenty of men I know dealing with body dysmorphia, a negative relationship with food, and the underlying psychological and emotional trauma that predisposes them to gut issues, to the inability to lose weight, and really perpetual stress and dissatisfaction in their life, who they are, and what they stand for and what they stand against. So if any of the information in this conversation resonates with you, then make sure to check out Justin's new book, The Flexible Dieting Disaster, and follow him and his programs. All of the links are in the show notes below, or you can find it at www.bslnutrition.com/episode84. And of course, do me a huge favor and please leave a positive rating and review in iTunes so that I can get more eyes and ears on our content, continue to bring on the most knowledgeable guests, and help more people in the process. Lastly, if you want to talk about working with me personally, then I'd love to chat with you. Just schedule your free nutrition strategy call over at www.bslnutrition.com/level up. That's it. Here's Justin, and I hope you guys enjoy the show. Justin Janoska, welcome to the Smart Nutrition Made Simple Show, brother. What's up?
How you doing, man? It's good to see you again.
Good to see you too. It's been a bit. We ran into each other at Jay Tita's event, where you were speaking, which was phenomenal, by the way. What was it called? Like the female metabolism a few months ago.
Metabolic female, yeah.
Yeah, the metabolic female, which is, for those of you listening, you're probably familiar with Jay Tita because I've had him on the show a couple times. And actually, Justin, so I ran into him at the event and he spoke, and super knowledgeable dude, as you're about to hear. But it turns out that we actually were in grad school at University of Bridgeport for a clinical nutrition degree at the same time. And I guess I didn't really realize, when did you graduate?
Yeah, that was 2016.
Okay. So I graduated finally. It took me like 4 or 5 years with the kids and everything, but I graduated 2015, but I hadn't realized that we were in the same program together. Like, I knew your name from, you know, our forums, like the homework forums that we participated in and class threads and stuff. But Brianna DiOrio, who was also on the show, she kind of reconnected us. And so it was cool to run into you at that event.
It's funny. Yeah, totally.
So we, you know, we were just talking before I hit record, but about your book. So you've got this incredible book that I just finished reading called The Flexible Dieting Disaster. And as I was saying, Justin, no one is talking about this stuff in the fitness industry. So what's kind of like, what's the underlying premise of the book?
Yeah, there are a couple of things, but to keep it really simple, the whole idea behind it was to shed light on the dark side of flexible dieting or macros and how that relates to dieting and why we diet in the first place.
Yeah.
And challenging people's beliefs, because my whole argument is also we are dieting for reasons that are not our own and therefore a subconscious part of ourselves. That's hence why the first chapter is titled, Why TF Are You Dieting?
Right.
And so I kind of go down a rabbit hole with this and start tying it into other things that could explain why we're dieting, which is due to unresolved, unreconciled emotions and things from our past, like trauma and childhood abuse and whatever else in that regard. And I also weave in the whole idea of influencers and social media having a role on impacting our decision to diet or do a competition in the first place. And so there's just a lot of different components to this. And it's part of like the, you may have seen it in the book, the trilayer model of eating disorder and disordered eating development. It's kind of just all these different pathways I've outlined from seeing this with clients and how it can go in this direction and that direction. And there's no right or wrong. It's just, it is what it is. And that's such a lot of anecdotal evidence, but there's actually research that also backs us up for each of these different connections I'm making,
yeah,
which I didn't know existed, which is crazy. So that's what I'm doing. And really it's not as much as it sounds like I'm trashing on macros. I'm really not doing that. It does have value, but we have to really acknowledge the shortcomings of it because they are there. And my whole belief, and I think this is true wholeheartedly, that it's flexible dieting is doing more harm than good to people. We don't know that because people are not coming forward and saying, yeah, I've got a really bad relationship with food and I'm tracking macros in my mind, even though I deleted my FitnessPal. No one's saying that, but I know that people have these thoughts because I've talked to them for so many years.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of young girls, like 18 to 24, 5-ish, that range. That's the demographic I'm really speaking to or towards,
I think,
in this book.
I think it's going far beyond that in terms of age. I think it's, and I think there's a lot of males that it's happening to now in this diet culture. And there's a lot of females at any age. But continue.
Yeah, no, you're probably right for sure. I was just speaking from my perspective, from my experience with talking to a lot of women. And, you know, I had a lot of applications when I was doing, you know, weight loss coaching some odd years ago before grad school. And I had people that would say, literally, and I put in like screenshots of applications that I have saying like, I can't stop tracking macros.
Right.
I keep binge eating. I have anorexia, orthorexic tendencies. And that's a problem. And for me, I was like, okay, well, we just need to be mindful eaters and start to develop intuitive eating. And that's just like, that was my very closed-minded, myopic view of it at the time. But then I realized, wow, there's actually a much deeper issue here. And I could probably say that, you know, with confidence, like 90%, I would say at least, of these issues that we're dealing with dieting and binge eating and anorexia as a whole, body dysmorphia, you know, all these thoughts we have and behaviors that are not serving us are rooted to past childhood issues or early adult stress or things like that. And then I kind of just bring that forward and say, well, here's what happens when we don't actually address these root issues. It's probably going to push you in this direction of PCOS, autoimmunity, neuropsychiatric illness, depression, anxiety. And that is like what I've seen, actually. It doesn't always end up being that case with everybody, but like it's not uncommon to see somebody who's been chronic dieting or done a competition to end up with PCOS, right?
You're tackling, I mean, that's what I say, no one's talking about this stuff because it's so seemingly complex. Although at the end of the day, it's maybe not. that complex. I mean, ultimately what you're saying is like, you need to dig into the deep, uncomfortable shit that no one's talking about, that no coach, that most coaches, I'll say, I will certainly say myself included, are not comfortable necessarily talking about or addressing with you, or educated enough to necessarily be able to do so. And so on surface level, it's like, yeah, you know, we're addressing kind of the macro issue and the flexible dieting issue and sort of the self-love, and but ultimately it's like this deeper level of self-acceptance and why am I dieting? Like, what truly am I trying to get out of this? And ultimately, oftentimes what you're seeing is your clients don't really want to be dieting. I mean, they want to be able to enjoy food without feeling restricted. They want to be able to be social and in a community environment and feel comfortable doing so. And conversely, not feel shut in at home, feeling restricted and stressed out that they're not out enjoying themselves and so on and so forth. So what is it ultimately that they're searching for? And what is the, you know, the shame and the guilt and the fear that's going on underlying all of this? It's very profound, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But you're right. Absolutely right on that. A lot of coaches don't want to even talk about it, and they'll just pretend like it doesn't even exist or it is an issue.
It's difficult to acknowledge, because I think when you're in the industry long enough, you know. Like, we talk a lot about mindset, right? Mindset's sort of this elephant in the room. And I'd say ultimately it's not necessarily mindset, but it's what, you know, this maybe underlying trauma or self-acceptance of what do you really want? And being comfortable enough with who you are. It's like, I can see so much value in what you do for helping women and men ultimately start to feel more comfortable in their own skin for who they are trying to be, what value they serve the world. And once they've established that, then they're just on a much better level to then be able to tackle, like, what do I want out of my body? Why do I want that? Which way do I want to eat? And so on and so forth.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, what made you kind of go down this rabbit hole? Like, what made you start to realize that it was far beyond just plugging in calories?
The first line of the book is, I didn't want to write this book. And that's true, I didn't. But I did it out of dire need, I think, to pass this information along and to help the young generation, like, really see what's happening, because they're just kind of blind to it, I think. And, you know, there's so many different topics within this. Like, why does everyone now in the industry seemingly have depression or anxiety? It's like everyone says they have it. And we're not asked the question of why. And we're just kind of like, yeah, I have it. And like, it's no big deal. I'll take Prozac and that's the end of it. You know, and so like, I'm trying to connect this to other sort of lifestyle issues like dieting and counting macros and really just allowing people to look through this from a different lens and see it from the 30,000 foot view sort of thing. And see, like, well, maybe there's something I'm missing and there's a whole reason for all this. I'm not here to judge or say that this is what's happening in your life, but if we don't ask questions or have awareness, we're never going to figure it out. And then we're going to find out later in life that we're actually just still wounded children at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my kind of argument. But I wrote it because, you know, part of it was my own frustration with the industry and seeing this over and over again, and seeing that a lot of my clients I was getting were really just people that had worked with really shitty coaches. And here is the aftermath of all of that. You know, I'm just kind of picking them up and like trying to save them and reverse their problems sort of thing. Not always, but that was my first encounter with it. And then honestly, the other part of it kind of weaves into my own personal story with, or my own sort of trauma, I guess you would call it. And really just to, you know, to give you the Reader's Digest version of it, you know, I was finding myself in a lot of unhealthy relationships with females in my 20s, and I'm 32, and I couldn't figure it out why. And what I found was that a lot of these ladies I was with were all people that were like my clients.
Mm.
They were abused. They were experiencing death, bereavement, eating disorders, you name it, everything. And I wanted to help them and I couldn't. It wasn't my job, I realized. And so part of helping clients with this stuff and why I got so interested in the trauma and how that relates to eating disorders and all that is because, like, if I can help them, then I kind of get what I want at the end. My way of getting what I want was giving them what they need. And this also relates to kind of my own, I've never really talked about this in any of the podcasts, but relates to my own parents and their divorce and how traumatizing that really was for me and what I had seen and witnessed. And, you know, so if I can help women now with this stuff, it will save them from having to, you know, be stuck in codependency relationships. Maybe it'll stop them from making their spouse feel like it's their fault or they're not doing enough, because I felt that way. Like it was my fault for why things didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And also prevent their kids from ending up like me or somebody else that is harboring these feelings. So, you know, there's different thoughts I have about this and how it kind of really affects every domain of life and every sort of relationship you might have. So that's a more personal, deeper, you know, reason for why I wrote it. That I didn't really honestly figure out until later. So it wasn't the primary drive to write it, but you see what I mean? It's just something that kind of, that's the bigger meaning for it, I think, for me.
When we were in school and, you know, we're kind of learning about all this, like learning about functional medicine and diagnostic testing and obviously, you know, physiology and biochemistry and all this stuff. Were you already working with clients? I mean, did you kind of know that you were going to go in this direction?
No, 0.0. My initial interest was to study alternative medicine for cancer. That's really what I wanted to learn. And we did that. It was cool, a little bit here and there. But that was the whole reason why I even applied to school. But then it took a drastic turn when my mom got really sick, and she was really sick for years. I didn't know it to the degree that it really was. And then I decided I have to just really focus on autoimmunity and see what I can dig out of this through school and asking around professors, study, you know, reading research, all that stuff. And, you know, then I could see how prevalent it really was and how everybody's just seemingly has Hashimoto's or some autoimmune disease, lupus, whatever. And that kind of just fell into my lap, you know, and the eating disorder thing fell into my lap too. And it's not uncommon to see those two things coexist. And then the trauma thing fell into my lap too, because I just saw it show up more and more with the autoimmune people, and then they all have all three. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's all connected for a reason. I see it now. And that's kind of why I got so interested in doing all this, because you have to address all these components, because, you know, as you and I both know, it's treating the person, not the disease or the label, so to speak, right?
Yeah, and obviously you were asking the right questions all along the way to be able to then really start to identify that this is just multifactorial.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dig into the autoimmunity a little bit, and kind of just in a nutshell, like, what are you referring to when you say autoimmune disease? You know, so I kind of want our listeners to understand a little bit more, like, what exactly is autoimmune disease and how do we know if it's something that we're dealing with?
Yeah, right. Good question. So really, to keep it simple, the whole idea or the definition of an autoimmune disease is simply your immune system attacking your own body in some fashion. So the antibodies can't differentiate between self and non-self. And there's a lot of confusion, and that relates to, there's some genetic component to it. We know that, but that's not the reason why. And we know that because in monozygotic twins, they have different sort of susceptibility to disease. And that can range between, 10 to 30-ish%. So that's how we know it's a lifestyle driven disease.
It's the external environment that's impacting the genetic expression.
Right, exactly. So that can look like a million different, like 100 different sort of diseases, but, the symptoms will overlap with a lot of them. But, you look at lupus, for example, and it's, symptoms related to joint pain and light sensitivity and muscle aches and fatigue, of course, and cognitive issues, and Hashimoto's can look like that as well a little bit. And, so the whole idea is that your antibodies are attacking some part of you, And that's where we get the name, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis in your joints, Hashimoto's into your thyroid, psoriasis into skin.
These are kind of like, what are the most common ones that you see or that we're seeing now through diagnostic medicine?
I'm going to say Hashimoto's for me, because I get that all the time. And maybe I track that because that's what I kind of put out there online. But
I'm seeing a lot of Hashimoto's.
It's still super common. I think statistically, it's probably like in the top three most common autoimmune diseases now. Lupus is a close second, I think. And beyond that, celiac, no, I don't know about celiac. I don't know. They're all different. I can't remember the numbers exactly, but that was a slide. I think I even.
Yeah, you would put up a slide, I recall. And it was, I mean, there was, 100 different autoimmune, quote unquote autoimmune diseases. So I think it's something that to some extent is relatively hard to classify into specific categories.
Yeah. All we really know is that they're all increasing right now and gargantuan proportions, really.
The prevalence is, I think you said something to the tune of like 50 million Americans now are experiencing some form of autoimmune disease. So our body is attacking our own body for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And the contributors are, yes, there's a genetic component, but it's really the external environment and the health of our internal environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you elaborate just a little bit on those two aspects in terms of how they contribute to these diseases?
Yeah. So one of the things I talk about a lot is the concept of, well, we're kind of overemphasizing the physiology or the biology, I guess, of autoimmunity. And that's not to say it doesn't matter. The environment does matter. It's part of the problem. There are toxins out there, infections, EMFs, all these things now changing. The environment's changed. Food's changed. Agriculture's changed. And so that's definitely an issue. Now, the other component to this, the other two components that I emphasize a lot with clients is the psychology and the biography. So, this didn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a water bucket. The water was accumulating over the years. And then all of a sudden you have a full blown manifestation of symptoms, and those antibodies could have been tested. If they were tested, 10 years ago before the diagnosis, they would have shown up in the blood and you would have had an opportunity to prevent it. And unfortunately we don't do that in conventional medicine, which is a real shame, because look where we are now. And we're kind of getting stuck now when in the full blown autoimmune stage. So the important thing for me is, well, we have to look at, well, how did you come to be this way? And your history tells you a lot, gives you clues as to, well, how you ended up here. And so that relates a lot to psychology and trauma and stress, because without a shadow of a doubt, that is probably the most significant factor when it comes to increasing your risk for autoimmunity, or it's an antecedent, or it's a something that precipitates the disease or perpetuates it, rather. All three, really. And I see it time and time and time again. And my mom is a perfect example of this. I know now that that was literally the one thing that really pushed her over the edge. And you can do everything right from an environmental, biological standpoint, where you heal your gut, you improve your liver detoxification, you cut out these foods, do AIP, take 20 supplements. But if you don't deal with the mental stuff and the things that are buried in your subconscious mind and really explore that, it's going to overshadow everything you do from a physical standpoint. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know that's true, because a lot of our clients have had these autoimmune diseases for 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
And nothing has worked because they've done those surface level things I just mentioned. And they have been dealing with all these emotional stressors and things like that have been just completely buried.
Hey, brother, are you struggling to find the energy to function at your best as a businessman, father, and husband? I want you to know you're not alone. And sadly, the conventional wisdom these days around healthy eating and exercise that has saturated the mainstream is flat out wrong. If you want to find the solution to optimizing your energy and body composition without restrictive dieting, soul-crushing workouts, or adding more to your already stressful and overflowing schedule so that you can finally function like the man you know you can be, then we need to chat. Are you ready to move from exhausted to energized by working smarter, not harder? Go ahead and schedule your free strategy call at www.bslnutrition.com/level up. I'm looking forward to our conversation and enjoy the rest of the show.
So it's these sort of underlying stressors, these traumatic events or a number of things I'm assuming that can contribute to it, but these basically stressful events that can happen early on in life that lead to almost this slow drip, right? That accumulates over the years that can be exacerbated by the environment or compounded, if you will, to the point where all of a sudden it's overflowing and we're experiencing these symptoms of autoimmune disease, right? Antibodies build and all of a sudden we've got quote unquote a disease, right? We've got Hashimoto's thyroiditis or lupus or multiple sclerosis. And then currently we're trying to band-aid with supplementation and gut healing protocols and not really addressing where the slow drip is coming from.
Yeah. And it's not to say those things don't matter, but they get entirely emphasized too much. And unfortunately, that's a lot of what the naturopaths and the functional med people do out there that I hear a lot. And I'm not shitting on them. They're great. A lot of good ones out there, right? Jade's a good one, but a lot of them are just still doing really the same thing their conventional doctor is doing, just with supplements instead of meds, you know, and that's not enough. And I say over and over again, you cannot diet and supplement your way out of an autoimmune disease, because if it were that simple, then we wouldn't be stuck in this predicament.
So what are some examples of some of these underlying traumas that contribute, you know, that end up proliferating down the road?
Yeah, sure. So I have a client right now that I'll just share as an example that's pretty different from me, but she has Hashi and Hashimoto's. And ironically, she's a therapist who does a lot of trauma stuff, but she's still dealing with her own childhood trauma of a tornado that kind of swept over her house when she was a child and blew her entire roof off, and is still experiencing that that damaging psychological effect of hypervigilance, increased arousal, you know, limbic system dysfunction, basically, where she's on high alert and is afraid of death and fears her kids are going to die. And
wow,
you're going to tell me that isn't going to affect her Hashimoto's? Of course it is. And so your body's perceiving a threat at all times, and it's practically being like in fight or flight mode 24/7. And that's the overall mechanism here. I would say one of them, that's the reason behind why these stressors, these chronic traumas are so impactful, and why they contribute to all these health problems, because that stress switch is always on, or it's just on a lot more than it should be. And you know, we know that the cortisol is very damaging to the body when it's long-term. It changes the way the immune trafficking happens, how immune cells interact, and it damages the brain. It causes PTSD, right? All those sort of things, damages your gut and so forth. So it has like a huge downstream effect. And so, you know, I don't even think about, from my perspective, I don't think about the diet and the supplements so much. I mean, they matter, but like they won't work as, they're not as effective when you don't get this mind stuff figured out first. So, and that takes a long time to heal. So my attention is on that. And how can we just heal that and unburden and undo those things?
How frequently do your clients are they actually cognizant of these events? And how often do you have to, like, and then what do you do to, if you're suspecting something, how do you dig in to help identify those? Like, what exactly was it?
Yeah. And that's part of what I show in the book. And because these principles are not just for trauma or, you know, an autoimmune disease person, it's literally for anybody who has behaviors and thoughts and emotions that are still holding on to that's not serving them, and they want to explore that. And that comes back to lurking at your biography and just exploring that and seeing how you got here. And awareness is the first step with all this. So to answer your question, though, I would say that a good, 80% probably know that they have stuff in their past. I got a client right now who has inflammatory bowel disease, and she wrote me a 6-page biography, and it's a lot. I've never seen anything so ridiculous in terms of what she had gone through. Moving out when she was 14 years old. Her father was a drug dealer, pedophile, verbally and physically abusive. All this in a biker gang. Her mom was, had her own issues, and like all of that. I mean, leaves an indelible mark on a young kid. You're a sponge soaking all that up, right? So like, it's so common to see, but like, yeah, most people have an idea, like she did, about what's going on. But there are definitely some things and moments where we have revelations or epiphanies later down this healing journey where, oh yeah, actually this is something that I forgot I had. I actually really am dealing with unworthiness or attachment issues or abandonment that I didn't realize I had. This is true for me as well, by the way. Yeah. I didn't realize I had things in my past related to guilt, shame, and abandonment myself. No, it didn't manifest into disease for me to the extent it does for my clients, but it's still something that we as humans are gonna face, and we have to learn how to heal it and deal with it, because it's gonna definitely carry forward and have an effect on you later in life if you do nothing about it, and all you do is just avoid it and resist it, right?
Yeah.
So that's that's kind of what I see with clients. So most know what it is, but a lot sometimes don't.
Yeah, and then taking the time. So one, to just take the time to delve it out and basically just go back and try and identify it and write your biography, write your story, how you came to be this way. And then what I appreciate about some of the techniques you use is helping people just start to identify what thoughts and beliefs that they're experiencing and sitting with them, as opposed to, right, you're not judging them. You're not feeling guilty about them. You're not trying to hide them. You're just noticing them and then basically acknowledging, okay, what, how am I feeling about this? What is my body trying to tell me? How do I lean into the discomfort of these thoughts and emotions that I'm currently feeling? Which, like I said at the beginning, man, no one's talking about this stuff, and it's a very uncomfortable conversation to have in our society. Mm-hmm. When everything, especially related to diet and physique, is so literally surface level that it makes sense that we turn to, what we see on social media, and we hide behind tracking. We can hide behind our diet as a means to express who we think we should be, who we want people to see us as, where it's not truly who we want to be or who we feel comfortable being, and just repressing what we truly want.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of us are dealing with issues with attention and acknowledgement and not feeling worthy. And here's the other thing too. I just thought of that is important to understand is a lot of people say they don't have trauma. They had a great upbringing. My parents were nice, whatever. Most people's issues are not related to the big traumas that you would think are, obviously very severe, like sexual abuse and neglect and abandonment and natural disasters and things like that, or bullying, right? But it's actually related to emotional neglect and detachment from a caregiver or parent, kind of like what I went through. And it's a lot of what we see. It's on a low grade level, but it matters. And especially if you create a story around it, which is really what the issue is, not the fact that we experience these traumas. It's the story and the beliefs and the thoughts you have about it that you carry forward, and it changes your perception and belief on things in life, which ultimately feeds into this self-defeating, self-harm, self-sabotage behaviors, which is eating disorders, competing, codependency things, drugs, alcohol, all those sort of things to kind of cope with those feelings and how to fill in the gap sort of thing. And that's my argument with why we're dieting and doing competitions and things like that and changing our body and getting so obsessed about it because that's our way of getting things we didn't get, maybe.
So moving through the emotional trauma and moving more towards the superficial of the actual act of logging and dieting and tracking your macros and if it fits your macros and all of that stuff, do you believe that there's a place for that, a useful place for actually tracking or learning how to track or anything like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a useful tool. I've used it and I think anybody can use it as long as they know that it is not a lifestyle, because, you know, think about it. We evolved as humans to eat intuitively and like just follow that wisdom. We don't do that anymore. We're kind of just following a program, and we're you can't be, you know, intuition is it's very interesting. Like people who do macro counting are basically people that I find, not all of them, of course, are people that are disconnected souls. They've disconnected from who they are. They don't know what their purpose is, what their meaning in life is, what their values are. They don't have a lot of these certain traits that I see. And it just makes sense. You know, we're kind of operating from a different place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we can track macros. Again, if you can do that and you're trying to achieve your goal, and you hit there, good. You can flip that macro switch off, but a lot of us can't, because it's still, we've reached our ideal body composition and we won that trophy, great, but it's still temporary. It's still temporary pleasure and gratification. Like you're still not dealing with the things that that are underlying all this, and you still have issues with unworthiness and a lack of attention, and you think it's going to get you know, fixed, I guess, by doing these things and competing, doing, losing weight, but oftentimes it's just transient and you're back to square one.
It's a very slippery slope, obviously. Yeah. It's a very, I know, you know, but
it's a bold statement to say that not everyone's obviously doing that, but I think that's subconsciously what's happening.
I think that I personally think it can be a very useful tool, as a means to start to get someone to be able to effectively eat more intuitively, right? Like, how do you eat intuitively if you have no idea? Because like this day and age, it's not like we're our great grandparents where, you know, we raised all our own food on a farm and we had very limited processed food intake or extremely calorically dense, nutritionally void food that we could take in. It's a totally different situation of saying eat intuitively. Like you only have access to nutrient dense foods versus now, like we can go a week without eating any nutrition whatsoever. So I think that it can be a very useful tool to help someone create the awareness necessary to ultimately be able to eat more intuitively.
I agree with that for sure. You know, and that's, it's all about the context and the person, right? And actually Jay would say this too, like, yeah, you need to have practice and experience in order to develop intuition.
Yeah, you know, that's it. It's a skill. I mean, it ultimately eating now is a skill. And man, you know, just the act of eating in and of itself, like making the right decisions is a skill. And in the right portion sizes at the right times, ultimately, depending on your goals. And then you factor in all of the emotions that revolve around it, the stress and the community aspect. And it becomes, you know, a beast in and of itself. What sort of tools do you use with your clients to help them build their ability to turn off that MyFitnessPal switch, the calorie tracking switch?
Yeah. Well, it comes back to the same sort of things, like I mentioned about the biography, but, you know, mindful eating and you know, journaling and, you know, paying attention to your five senses, all those things are helpful. And you still want to do that because that's part of the process, but it's not enough, I find, because you have to rewire that neural circuitry, right? And I think really what's happened is that we have a conditioned pattern, you know, neuroplasticity, right? What fires together, wires together, and we need to, you know, fire new things. So we need to look retrospectively in history and see, well, you know, why are we counting macros? Okay, because we want to diet. Why do we want to diet? You know, you just kind of go back and back and back, and that's how we start to piece this away and see, like, okay, well, really the bottom of the barrel issue is I feel worthless. I feel inadequate, or whatever. And so we can, it comes back to, I talk about it in the book, I think it's getting clarity on the emotions, and that might take some time. It's not very cut and dried always, because it might look like anger or unhappiness, but really there's a deeper emotion there. So we need to figure out what that is. Then we can dissect it, maybe kind of put the story together as to, how did it come to happen this way? And look at it non-judgmentally, of course, and just see if what it is. And really the whole idea, the common theme with all of this, with helping people get through this, these pains and wounds, and ultimately turn off the macro switch, okay? It's really just changing our relationship to these traumas and wounds and emotions we have. Because the thing I say is that, you know, nothing changes in your life except for how you look at it. And when you change the way you look at and be with something, what you look at and be with changes. So obviously, I would say a lot of us are not doing that because we're just avoiding, denying, resisting, and that's not conducive to healing anything. And, mm-hmm. you know, the body bears the burden. I think we've kind of established that. So, you know, the body doesn't forget what the mind does. So we can try to avoid these things all we want and resort to food and alcohol and drugs or whatever else, materialism, promiscuity, whatever. But if you're still harboring these things, it's going to still subconsciously allow you to continue to behave in a way that is really in an effort to reconcile the past, which is losing weight, tracking macros, get my drift, right? Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Like that was something I found out for me later in life. But yeah, in the beginning of it all, I thought, hey, we can just do mindful eating and food journaling and all that stuff. And actually it worked for a little bit, and maybe it does. And that's great, but I think it'll only be transient. It's not going to be sustainable, because if you have like things in your past, it's still going to come back up, and then you're going to be still stuck.
So do you find that as your clients develop a healthier relationship with themselves, with who they are, with what they truly want, that their relationship with food improves to the degree that they no longer desire to track? But mm-hmm. within that, do then they also start to make better decisions just intuitively?
Yeah. Well, better decisions in life.
I want to get there actually, just yeah. in effect,
Well, sure. Because I think I talk about a case study in the book where I had a girl who had anorexia, or binge eating rather, I think. And so when we decided to look at that, explore it and uncover it, well, the desire to lose weight became less appealing, you know? Yeah. And so that's kind of what we are hoping for, I think. And if you want to lose weight because you just want to, and it makes you feel confident, then cool, knock yourself out. Like I'm not discouraging you from doing that, but you should be doing it for the right reasons and doing it from a place of purpose and passion or whatever, not from a place of fear or trying to, you know, just heal a wound sort of thing. So like that's what I think we strive for, and that's definitely very possible.
It seems to me that ultimately when that sort of inner confidence is regained, that every decision becomes easier to make, to the degree that I can eat that cinnamon roll and you know, feel no guilt or shame and own it and feel great because it's something I wanted to eat. Or I can say, you know what, I'm going to intentionally choose to pass it up simply because I don't really feel like it. I don't feel like I need to eat it because nothing else, you know, is coming down the road, or there's nothing else associated beyond this is what I truly want for myself and my higher purpose and sort of value system. Because I love myself and I'm doing what's best for me. So within that is, I imagine, because we know when someone goes down the road of physical transformation and emotional transformation, how much they change as a person, like they literally change as a person. So my question is, I imagine that with some of the clients you work with, they start to have to ask themselves some very hard and difficult questions related to a lot of the relationships that they currently have in their lives, as to whether it's actually helping them or hurting them?
Yeah, I think that kind of happens automatically. That insight arrives, and that's part of this too, is like the insight arrives later and you can't plan for it. You can't follow a to-do list to get there. It's just, you know, the analogy I use is like putting on a blindfold and getting out into a boat and then paddling out to the middle of the ocean and hoping that you reach land one day. You trust that you'll get there. And that's the same with this. You trust that you'll heal it. You don't know how, you don't know when, but you know that it'll come. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like with this whole eating thing, like, okay, if you are able to establish a better relationship with food and you can dump macro counting, it's probably going to reflect and have a ripple effect, I guess I would say, in other areas of your life. And you're going to start to see like why, what counting macros really is telling you for yourself and why you do it. And then you might see the deeper wound or emotion that's kind of underlying it. And that might explain why you're in this unhealthy relationship with your significant other, for example, or why you start getting really bitchy and impatient with your coworkers. You know, like it's just some things that you start to connect the dots later, because all these patterns and behaviors are stemming from something. You just don't know what, you know? So that's kind of what I mean. That's why it's not uncommon, I think, to see these things all stand side by side with each other, like depression, anxiety, eating disorders, codependent relationships, and always seeing them fail, and just being isolated, I guess, maybe, and not having a strong social network. You know what I mean? And also being a culture level human that Jay would talk about, and just kind of like, you know, one-upping other people, which you see all the time in social media. You know, you see what I mean? So like that's, yep. You see certain patterns with some people, and the whole idea is to look at it, and then while we can look, you know, later in life and see that, well, we've all transitioned out of this and became the next level human, I guess, right? Or better mm-hmm. version of ourselves.
Yeah, man. What do you think needs to happen for the fitness industry to start to move in the right direction?
Yeah, that's the $1 million question, right?
Is it that what people start to acknowledge what it is that they actually want to allow professionals to start to give them what they need?
Yeah.
Versus the other way around.
Definitely that, the former. We're definitely gonna have to have a stronger voice. People are gonna have to, you know, start talking. So that's a challenge. So the audience needs to speak up more for sure, but I don't know the answer to this rather. But I think if the industry is going to change, it's going to be much down the road, beyond our lifetime, maybe. Who knows? And right now, all I see it is from the perspective of we just have to change our relationship to it and how we see it. And because really the suffering is on us if we decide to become reactive to things like we see. And that changes our personality and our behaviors and whether or not we diet and those sort of things. So I'm not one to be like, we need to change influencers and like make them stop doing this, because that's a losing battle. You're never going to win that, I think.
100%.
Yeah. Completely. So it's just, you have the ability to like right now, this very minute, to, you know, change your life by just choosing how you respond to things. And that's just what we have available to us. And so it's not worth putting energy into that, I think, into the social media influencers and all those things that, you know, the diet industry and all that, because we're not a strong enough force right now to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know? You're definitely changing the tide with this discussion. And so I'm happy to be able to share just a little bit of it with everyone listening. And I appreciate what you're doing in the industry, because it's a necessary voice. Justin, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah. So simply, a few places. Instagram is just my name, Justin Janoska, Janoska. And I talk about all this sort of stuff and more. And the website that we have is theautoimmunerevolution.com. And that's just my base for what I do, which is primarily autoimmune disease. But like I mentioned, it ties into a lot of this eating disorder stuff and reproductive issues with females. And really, it's all women's health. But the autoimmunity is my jam. The book, The Fucks with Diamond Disaster, it's on Amazon. And that's about it.
Awesome, man. Like I said, it's a great book and it's profound. I mean, it's obviously all the stuff that we're talking about. This is stuff that I haven't really talked about very much on the show that no one really talks about. And it's obviously necessary to start discussing, to start acknowledging and to start to figure out why, if you're listening and you're, you know, you're tracking or you're feel like you're obsessed with tracking or feel like you need to track, why it is you're doing what you're doing. And yeah, kind of digging down to a deeper level. So Justin, I really appreciate it, man. It's absolute pleasure to have you on and to be able to share your wisdom with our listeners. And yeah, man, we'll have to connect again soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben, so much. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Did you love this episode of the Smart Nutrition Made Simple show? Then head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a positive rating and review. And more importantly, share this with other men that you know are dedicated to leveling up in every area of their life by learning how to live healthier, more energetic, and productive lives so that they can optimize their health for their family and future. Thank you for listening. And if you want to find out more about how you can work directly with Ben, then just head on over to www.bslnutrition.com/levelup.